Also, don't like creating dishes, so I'd put Saran wrap inside my dishes, then put like cereal inside the Saran wrap, eat the cereal out of it, then throw the Saran wrap away. Wow. Never clean the dish.
That's amazing. So,
wow.
Yeah. And so I got married, and Paige was like,
I feel for Paige.
We need to change.
What is that? Did you learn that from your family? Or
no,
is it just,
they don't do that. Yeah, like leftovers, you put it all inside the dish with inside Saran wrap. Ah. Then you just eat the leftovers out of like mac and cheese.
What if you got to heat it?
Throw away the Saran wrap. Yeah, just cook it up in the microwave.
Saran wrap will melt. It's plastic.
I was good with it. I've never had, I probably have eaten so much plastic in my life.
That's amazing.
I don't know.
All right.
Oh. Well.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast A Little Better. Today I'm joined with Drew and Ashley. It's amazing. We're jumping into our parenting series this week, and I just want to introduce Ashley. Thanks for being on the podcast. Your first time here. Welcome. Welcome home. It's pretty fun. We got a little LED light over here, A Little Better. So you're on the podcast and you're going live. This week, we jumped in the first week of our parenting series, Because I Said So. And so Drew, why don't you give us your sermon in 60 seconds?
Yeah, we started at a little bit of a unique place, right? Abraham and Isaac, and ultimately we're looking at Abraham's heart and God asking him, like, is there anything that you love more than me, even your child that you've waited for? And so what we learn from Abraham from a parenting perspective is that our children are God's. And his plans are better than ours. Even the plans that we dream of, that the safe plans, God's plans are always better. And so out of this story, we see Abraham's example for Isaac and our lives as parents, as aunts and uncles, just our influence over the next generation. Hmm. Our example matters. It's one of the greatest teachers to our children.
Hmm. I love that. Love that. What did you leave out? You know, this, you guys talked a lot about like the practical side of things. Were there more practical tips or the things you left on the cutting floor that you're like, man, this is so good, but I couldn't fit it all in?
I think one of the things is like just the tension, and we even talked about this at pre-preach, of people who aren't parents. I think I would love to have a little more time to just talk about how, even though you're not a parent, how much influence you have over children and how kids don't just watch their parents, right? Mm-hmm. The lessons they learn don't just come from mom and dad. They come from friends. They come from aunts and uncles, grandma and grandpa. Like, they just watch how people live. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, Ash, we would probably love to give, like, more examples. Like, there's so many examples in parenting, but you got to narrow it down to a few.
Yeah, Malachi is probably our most observant child, and everybody has an observant kid in their life, like a kid that picks up on details. And so Malachi is 8, and he catches all the details. And so I would definitely say that, like, he is the kid who's going to talk about, like, oh, so-and-so's dad does it like this, or my coach does it like this, or like whatever that may be. And so I would say with our kids, like a great example would be that like Malachi likes to observe other dads, other guys. He's really like, he's super into like, what are other guys doing? And so like teenagers at church, like he's definitely like watching that.
Oh yeah.
And even Joelle, even though Joelle, our oldest, who is about to be 10, she's probably our least observant child. She's just very, she's not into the details at all. That being said, she is always watching like teenagers within our church family. Mm-hmm. And what are the girls on, like, what are the musicians on stage doing? Mm-hmm. She is all about people watching when it comes to our church family. What are the other moms talking about at our community group? Mm-hmm. I definitely could like really, if I stopped and thought about it, she is, our older two are definitely catching what other people within our church family are doing.
Totally. I used to lead an NYM and I led a small group, and some of the parents would come connect with me, you know, and so I'd been telling some of the kids certain things and just modeling and just, you know, being around them. And I was kind of like a few years older, maybe like, you know, 7 or 8 years older than them. It's kind of like an older brother. And I their parent came to me one night and she's like, you said to my son to not do this anymore. And I've been telling him to do that for like 20 years, his whole life. I've been telling him not to do that. And he's like, and he listens to you like over me. Like what is going on? Like, how are you able to like speak into his life this way when I had, you know, I've been telling him this exact same thing. Like, and he just like, and he's like, you know what Noah told me? Oh, this epiphany, you know?
Dude, I have felt that tension as a youth pastor, right? Like so many years I'd preach sermon after sermon after sermon. Like, are you guys getting it? We'd go go to summer camp. This guy would come in, he would preach four sermons, and it was like, oh my word, no one's told me this before. And I'm like, I've been saying that for years. And there, it just, wow. And I think that is so true. And I think people have to recognize that. Like, this is a parenting series, but it's way bigger than that. Because our influence, how we act, has an impact on all different kinds of people, from our kids to other people's kids, adults to teenagers.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that every parent rejoices when that happens. Like what you were talking about, Noah, like as a mom, I rejoice when a teenager at church shares some truth about God or God's scripture or how he has changed their life with Joelle. And then my 9.5-year-old, who thinks she is 13, that resonates with her. So that mom, Noah, was so, so happy in that moment when you were able to share that. And so I think that every parent is going to rejoice when another parent or peer or teen or person within our church family is going to share truth about God with one of our kids. That's an amazing moment, because really a light bulb does turn on for that kid because of this adult.
Yeah. It was crazy. I was like, oh, I guess I'm having a bigger impact than I realized. That's and I'm like, 20, it's pretty cool. You guys talked a little bit about your journey of, adoption and through, not being able to have kids. Like, talk me through that season. What were the biggest things you learned? What were the things that you felt like God really pushed into you or helped you figure out about his character?
Our adoption season was such a beautiful season, but it was definitely foreshadowed by our series. We had 3 years of infertility. It was a diagnosis after 12 months. It's a diagnosis, and there's many people in our church family that I know struggle with this. And God taught me as a wife and as a mom and as a woman in that series that he creates life. He is the author of life. And there was nothing I could do to really change that within my power. And that sense of control, that is such, like, that marks parenting, that marks your spiritual walk, that marks our kids. Like, that sense of control, which we have no sense of control, which we realize as we as we keep going through this life. That was like, the ladder rung number one for me is like, you may think that you have control. You have no control of the situation. The Lord will create life. The Lord will take away. The Lord will give. And so, believe it or not, I'm thankful that we went through that, because I think God had to teach me a lot of really hard lessons through not being able to get pregnant and then not being able to make our adoption process move any faster than I wanted it to move. Those things, it was all God's timing. And so it helped being able to lay that down. Now, praise the Lord, fast forward, 10 plus years later, we have 4 kids and I still have zero control. I have no control if they get sick. I have no control if they eat organic food at somebody else's house or not. I have no control if they are running down a hill and trip over their shoes and their entire face is covered in blood. You just don't have any control. And so you just have to like it's just like this everyday surrender. And that is craziness.
I think for me, the infertility, I think, was harder on Ashley than it was me. I looking back at our story now, I just see how everything that God does is perfect, right? We wanted a kid faster than it came, but knowing what I know now and the process of adopting Malachi and how hard that process was, you can see how God gave us a couple extra years as a married couple to grow our relationship, to be able to handle the struggle that we would go through with adoption and children. And so you just see when in the middle of the circumstance, you don't understand what God is doing. But as you look back on it, you get to see his like perfection, like, yep, needed that. Yeah, I didn't want that, but I needed that. And you get to see God's handiwork and his bigger picture happening that you're like, man, God, what you did didn't make sense, but now it makes total sense. And just learning to trust God's plan, even when you don't like it, even when you would draw it up differently.
That's really true. It's, when you bring home a kiddo, when foster families, adopted families within our church family, like everybody can kind of like, the resounding yes is when you're bringing in a kiddo into your family that's been through something, that's been in a hard situation, it's hard on your family. Mm-hmm. Your family accepts this person. And by accepting them, you accept trauma, mm-hmm. you accept baggage. Mm-hmm. And I do agree with what Drew's saying. Those years of infertility, though they added to the time in which we waited, it actually strengthened our marriage so that we could really link arms mm-hmm. and help Malachi through those first couple of years of him transitioning mm-hmm. into our family. And praise the Lord for that, because yeah. those were some harder times. And now getting to be on the other side of it, and Malachi is thriving and he has siblings, praise the Lord. So mm-hmm. yeah, it was really good, mm-hmm. but it was a lot of waiting and a lot of patience, mm-hmm. but like necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good. I love that there's just surrender of, you know, the life that you can't control, whether who lives, who dies, how this works, like it's just not in our control. I love that so much. And that's kind of a theme through this whole message, was surrender. And, you know, you see like Abraham and Isaac going to this mountain and they're going to be surrendering. And I think it's interesting because Isaac was actually, some scholars think, older than like a teenager.
Yeah.
And his dad takes him up this mountain and, you know, he doesn't know what's next. He's like concerned, what is happening here? And actually both of them end up kind of laying down, surrendering their control in the situation to God and saying, God, I surrender my heart, what my desires are, to you. And God is providing a way out of that. But how can we raise kids who are surrendered to God? You know, because even you look at the cross and Jesus, God brings a son who surrenders his life for us to redeem us. How do we raise kids who surrender to God?
You know, to be honest, if I knew the answer fully to that question, I would be a genius, right?
Yeah. I think you'd write a book.
Yeah, I think we live a life surrendered. Mm-hmm. I think it has to start there. Like, you know, but it, even a life surrendered, like you look at, I think one of the most inspiring and kind of scary examples is Jesus. Mm-hmm. Jesus poured his life into 12 guys, and 11 of them got it. Mm. One didn't. Mm-hmm. And he did it perfectly. And so there's hope in that. Like, I don't have to be even perfection, you know? So like that gives hope, but it also is hard, right? Like if my kids, the greatest shot my kids have to surrendering to Jesus is if they see me surrendering to Jesus, mm-hmm. right? That model I think is the greatest teacher. And so, you know, if your life isn't surrendered to Jesus, I don't think it's wise to have an expectation that your kids will surrender to Jesus. They That's need good. To see that in you. Mm-hmm. But the grace of God, even if they don't see that in you, they still could surrender to Jesus. That's the beauty of God's grace in our life. But I think it starts with you modeling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually talk about that. You know, one of the first points that we talk about when I come up on the stage is what it's caught, not taught. And I think statistically, kids are not going to grow up and outperform their parents. Mm-hmm. You know, now that's just a statistic. God's grace is so much bigger than that. But statistically, the kids around us are not going to just start outperforming what was modeled. Mm-hmm. So that is 100% true. And we talk about just trying to like model that for your kids and be the example for your kids. And I know that we hear that over and over again, but it really isn't a cliche, because if you show them how to do it, you know, that like showing them how to do it is easier than telling them. You know, everybody got triggered when their parent was like, mm-hmm. do what I say, not what I do. Mm-hmm. Well, what? You know, that doesn't work. That was like a trigger for most people who had Hypocrisy. A parent that said that. The modeling of, you know, they're going to let them catch your behavior, not just like whatever you're saying. Mm-hmm. Right. I think, you know,
the old saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right? Yeah. That's exactly what we're talking about, is ultimately like all your kids know, especially early on, is what they see in you. Mm-hmm. They learn how to talk by you talking. They learn how to walk by watching you walk. And you know, your kids play a part in that too. Like they whatever's modeled for them, mm-hmm. good or bad, they pick up and they act out. Mm-hmm. And that is like ultimately a beautiful picture of the early years of parenting.
Yeah. No, I love the example. Caught by taught was like such a key in the message, and it's something I carry away with me. It's interesting. 1 Timothy says, let no one look down on you because of your youth, but be an example and set a pattern for believers in speech and conduct and love and faith and in purity. And I was thinking about like how our kids just like Isaac, could be an example to our parents as well, yeah, of like purity of faith and moving the needle both ways. And we need to be an example for our kids, but we also need to have our kids be an example for each other, yep, and for our church. And there's just like this broad example of caught by taught that, mm, everyone gets better when the church gets better, mm, that as we grow together, then we grow stronger and our whole generation grows in their example of living towards Christ. And I just love that example, set a strong, mm, example. Even says Titus 2, it says, let the older women teach the younger women and let the older, yep, men set an example for the younger men. It doesn't say teach the younger men, set an example. I just love that, that our whole church needs to be setting example for the next generation. And that if our tree is big, then our apples will be big too, yep, you know? And so if we're growing, if we're growing big apples, they don't fall far from a big tree. And
I love what you said about that, Noah, is so good, because it's, this never ends, right? Mm. Like you might hear somebody, like you might hear a friend at coffee say, I just don't want to do retirement or empty nesting like my parents did. Mm. Well, pressure is kind of still on, because if you have adult kids, this doesn't change. Like, how great would it be for our kids or our friends' kids or the kids around us as they become adults to be like, gosh, I would love to empty nest the way my parents did. I feel like their, mm, marriage got deeper. I feel like, mm-hmm, things got, yeah, richer. Mm-hmm. Or I would love to retire the way my dad did. He still loves to go in and encourage his coworkers. And a lot of them are over at our house all the time. Like, it never has to end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a great point for older parents or even grandparents, right? Now you have a dual role where you're setting an example for your grandchildren, but your example still doesn't stop for your children, because, mm-hmm, you are still ahead of them, right? You're still paving, pioneering a way that they haven't been for. And so like we think, oh, my kid's gone. My example, maybe, yes, it diminishes, but your kids are still looking up to you. They're still looking to see how you handle, mm-hmm, certain scenarios. I also love the story of Abraham and Isaac. And this is something I couldn't bring out, but again, I think you mentioned it. We don't know how old Isaac was, mm-hmm, right? A lot of scholars believe anywhere from teenager to like all, really even like man.
Yeah.
And we do know that he's old enough to carry, yeah, the wood, which isn't a light task. They're climbing a mountain. Abraham isn't going to do it, probably because, mm-hmm, he's older.
Old, yeah.
And so if you were just to like, a lot of scholars believe Isaac willingly laid his, he could have probably taken his dad at this point.
Right.
He's young. Mm-hmm. Abraham's old. Like if he doesn't want to go on this altar, yeah, nah, dad, sorry, you're crazy. But like both of them are modeling for each other, like, exactly, almost encouraging each other.
Exactly.
This is what God wants. And, mm-hmm, Isaac saw this in his dad, mm-hmm, early age. And now they're doing this together.
Yeah. The same thing with Jesus on the cross, you know,
yeah,
seeing it from his father, modeling it for us and doing it together, surrendering, yes, together. It's a beautiful picture. So on that train of topic, a lot of people like quote Proverbs and train up a child in the way that is right and he will not depart from it when he's old. And there's a lot of grace in your message. If you're a parent who has a child who's walked away from faith, and someone, you know, you read this verse and it feels condemning, like what are words for them? Or what do you guys think about that passage? What is the Bible saying in that passage?
Yeah.
Train a child up in the way that is right, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it.
Yeah, I think one thing we have to understand from Proverbs is these are principles, not promises. Mm-hmm. And so the Bible is not saying if you train your child to love the Lord, they will always love the Lord. It's, mm-hmm, a principle. So like, yes, most of the time that's the result, but, mm-hmm, there are outliers and our kids ultimately have to choose, mm-hmm, right? We can do everything right. Jesus did everything right with Judas. He still chose darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a parent who maybe you have older kids who have walked away from their faith, one, don't wear that guilt, right? Mm-hmm. I would also say their story isn't over yet, right? So they might depart, but they still can return, mm-hmm, right? And so if they're not gone, there's still time. Keep praying, keep teaching them the truth, keep loving them, and just keep begging God. Mm-hmm. God, bring them back, show them the truth, because ultimately it's not in your hands. It's like Ashley said, we don't control what our children choose. That's God's path for their life. And we just got to pray and pray and pray, mm-hmm, that God would protect them from evil and bring them to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's for sure. There, if you know, the story isn't over if the story isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you can never stop begging God in prayer for your kids,
mm-hmm,
and just, you know, humbling yourself. It's, you know, if you feel like the Spirit is prompting you, an apology is never wasted.
That's right. Mm.
You know, saying sorry, you know, looking back at your life, I'm sorry for ways that you felt like I didn't do this right. Like, as an adult, going back to your kids, going to your teenager, going to your adult child, I'm sorry. Mm. If I failed you in this, I love you and I feel remorse for this. Mm. And so a sorry is absolutely never the wrong decision. You know, when Drew and I went into youth ministry, I think there was so much excitement because in youth ministry, they don't have this backpack of burdens and sin yet. It's kind of just like the beginning. And so I think it always is an exciting time when you have young children around you at church, your friends' kids, your nieces and nephews, your siblings, to just make sure that you're trying everything within your power to push them towards the Lord. Hmm. Because, right, like hard situations can arise. And so it's just that foundation is so important. So it's a reminder of the foundations for the little kids around us. Mm. And then, my other tip would be it's never too late to say sorry and to just re-examine your own heart.
Yeah. And I think looking at this from another angle of like, if you've got young kids, okay, I'm going to step on some toes. It's my spiritual gift. Stop chasing your kids' sports so much, right? And like sacrifice sports to push your kids towards the cross, right? I think so many parents get lost in, you know, extracurricular activities, which listen, I played sports, I did travel sports and they do teach good lessons. But if you're choosing sports or dance or whatever it is constantly over being with the family of God and being a part of a church, you are modeling something for your children. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure it's the message you want to. And so just be careful. I'm not saying sports or dance or extra stuff is bad, but when it gets in the way of being part of a family, of the family of God, and being involved with the family of God and the things of God, I just want you to know what type of message you're sending your kids, whether you recognize it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we played football growing up, and we moved to New York, and it was all Pop Warner on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of my football career. I'm telling you what. I have parents who may view it differently, but like even less than 1% of high school athletes will make it to college, and then less than 1% of them will make it pro. So the chance, you know, just like the numbers are really, you can learn a lot of valuable lessons, but when we prioritize like sports or extracurricular busyness, those things, we're saying something to our, that's an example that I learned, like, oh, football's not as important as church, you know, just as a fifth grader. And so
I think you also teach them. It's about like, if you're running the roads and separating your family, you teach them, it's all about them. You know, Drew and I have to like real, you know, because I think as a parent, these things come in waves. You don't like wake up with your newborn and be like, I'm going to make my kid be so saturated in extracurricular activities that I'll never see my spouse again. You don't wake up and plan this. I think like, because we are kind of getting into that season as our kids get out of the like diaper stage and like, you just like, one mom says that they're doing Little League and the next dad says they're doing theater club. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, you know, and then you're like, oh golly, I really would love my kid to learn a musical instrument. That's so great for their left brain, right brain. You don't mean to it. Like, I just think that these things just start like dribbling in. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, the drip, drip, drip has become this like rushing river that your family is on and you can't go turn up and swim upstream. Mm. And so it's really hard, but you have to slow down. Drew and I try to talk about all of that together because Drew did come from like the sports family. And yes, there was amazing lessons to be learned. But if he's on the road with one kid and I'm on the road with the other kid, I'm scared that I'm going to teach my kids it's all about them. Mm. It's not about God. It's not about mommy and daddy's marriage. It's not about sitting down at the dinner table together. We're just going to get you to where you got to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm terrified that's going to raise a super selfish kid.
Mm. Yeah. That's
and,
good.
And as a parent, you have to be okay sometimes being the bad guy and saying, no, you can't do this. Sorry, I know that you really want this, but I know this isn't good for our family or this isn't good for you. And that creates tension, but that's what a parent's job is to think about the future, think about their spiritual walk with God and help them, guide them. And, you know, as much as they will not like it now, I think they'll come back and say, thank you for doing that for me.
Hmm. That's so good.
And the church can come, I mean, I, as a family within the church, like we can come along each other, side each other. I know in our community group, we've talked about this. You know, we do, you know, when we're talking about these kind of things, just encouraging, like, hey, I haven't seen you guys at church in a while. Like, we would love to see y'all there. Or like, let's get a picnic and reconnect about like how things are going with your family. Encouraging other families around you within your community group that like, this isn't, it feels important. You might be, you know, you might have tunnel vision right now, but like, let's take a step back. You even use this time, it's summer. It's summertime to like, talk about it, reset, encourage other people around you in your community group or in your, in the community that you hold within Northridge about how they can help their kids like readjust their focus and make sure that, you know, and that's a tough conversation to have. I mean, that's iron sharpening iron right there. Mm-hmm. It's a hard conversation to go to your friend and be like, guys, I feel we haven't seen you at church in 8 weeks. Where you at? But it, like that's, we can pull each other. If we don't advocate for each other, who is outside of the walls of our church?
Right. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I love that. It's just the principle of training your child up, and it's not a one size fits all, but when you choose one thing over another, you're just setting an example, you're setting a tone. And so how do we make sure that the tone at the top is clear and that we're moving in the same direction as a family? And I love the caught not taught, that, you know, no matter what you teach your kids, if you do something different, good luck getting the results you want, you know, with whatever you say. It's all about how you, what you do, and they see every minute of it. And so
they see everything. Drew joked today during pre-preach, Drew was joking about like our kids two rows back, and they can totally like hear like everything that we're saying, even though we think we're in the front seat, like whispering about the day's events, and they see and they hear everything. And so it, you know, if you're thinking like, golly, I just want a day off. Well, no, God doesn't get a day off from parenting us. And so we don't get a day off from parenting them.
That's good. Well, this is week one in our series. Where are we headed from here? What's the next for both of us? I mean, both of you guys are up next week as well and talking through parenting some more.
Yeah, so next week is kind of a shift away from parenting, like viewing yourself as a parent and actually shifting, like I'm not parenting, I'm raising disciples, right? And so kind of shifting our gaze and having a posture shift of like, ultimately, I'm stewarding what God gave me to help disciple, to make disciples who will go change the world for Christ.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Ash will be up again with you.
Yeah.
Steph, some little practical tips at the end. I love that. It was really cool to see you guys together and cheering you on from the podcast. So
we are, I was going to say, we're preaching to ourselves too. We, we joked a lot this morning about like, it's a total like hands-on field guide because we are in the middle of it right now.
Yeah. That's exciting. I'm pumped. I can't wait next week. It'll be awesome. You guys join us back here for a little better, but we're excited. We're encouraged. Week one of our series is over, and we hope to see you next week in week two of Because I Said So. See you guys.